Siren Radio.
So I suppose there is always that positive news that we do have a visitor from the President of the United States in the country. Okay, maybe not. Well, what can I say, Gabriella? Is the front page of the Gibraltar Chronicle going to be packed with news about England's World Cup scenario? Is it a case of, what the hey, I've got more important things to do? Like, for instance, give the nation the weather forecast for Lincoln from Gibraltar. Please, Gabriella, that is your cue.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln is highs of 22 degrees centigrade, lows of 12 degrees centigrade. It's a day of sunny intervals with a gentle breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Okay, moving on. Did you watch the game, Gabriella? I mean, we will be talking about this at times throughout the session today. Don't worry, we won't overdose on the whole system because, as we mentioned, our broadcaster, Philippa Forrester, comedian Shappy Corsandi, and indeed lots of other guests would probably say, no, we're here to talk about things like holiday rage, packing for holiday, all the sorts of other bits and pieces. But talk us through what you were doing last night. Or was it just a case of, ah, what the hey, I just can't be bothered?
I watched it in passing.
Which passing bit was this? Was this the passing at the first half when we thought England were going to do the business? Was it 22 minutes to go when we were actually heading to the World Cup final? Or was it a case of passing at the end where we thought, oh, another disaster?
The whole thing, but really I wasn't concentrating.
No.
It was on the TV, but, yes. They're in body but not in mind.
Yes.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
Frodo was very much asleep through it all.
Yeah.
He couldn't do anything to
influence the result in any way, shape, or form. Couldn't actually have a Frodo-based Gareth Southgate waistcoat. What about the Rock of Gibraltar itself, though? I mean, has there been a vibe, or was it just a case of, well, you know, once Spain were out, we just lost interest?
No, there's been a massive vibe here. The bars have all been packed with people screaming for England, so it's been quite a big deal over here as well. Everyone brought out their England shirt, and after the match, everyone was just kind of like sadly going home. So
I see what you did there. Just way forward.
I didn't mean it that way.
Of course you did. It's okay. You're a professional journalist. You know, if you can't slip in something from that point of view, saying the shirts are going home, but not the trophy. It's really excellent. And what about the Gibraltar Chronicle? Was that an instruction to go full on the actual package, or was it a case of no, just ease back?
No, we didn't actually, because we've had a busy news week. To be honest, we haven't really concentrated on football too much. We've got our sports pages, which can run. But
well, who knows? About 4 years' time in Qatar, maybe Gibraltar could qualify.
Who knows?
I mean, you are there. I know you didn't have the most triumphant of passages in the World Cup finals this time round, but you know it's going to happen one day along the line. I mean, Croatia, teeny tiny country. I mean, what an amazing thing that would actually be, Gibraltar versus England in the World Cup final in 2022.
No, I didn't know we'd get to that level.
Yeah. I just put it out there.
I
put it out there as a possibility. You know, it's well worth considering.
Go against Egypt or something like that.
Oh, this year, we'll just see where things go in the whole process. So what does the rest of the day have in store for yourself, Gabriella?
Not much. No. Okay.
Well, it's just as well. We've got the delights of two fantastic students from KDU Penang University. You'll be talking with us about 15, 20 minutes or so about their experiences over in Britain and their sort of thoughts on the World Cup and so on. And also how actually one of the most significant things for at least one of them since moving here from the joys of Malaysia for a few weeks at least has been to actually make authentic Lincolnshire minced meat burgers. I know, exactly.
Yeah,
cooking.
That's
the sort of key thing, is a cooking side of things from that point of view. As mentioned, Shappy Corsandi will be talking about how she keeps her children entertained and how staycations and travel can actually lead to all manner of tensions and such like. And we've got the joys of Train Like a Jedi with Ellie Cannon to also talk us through that. Plus, of course, the notion of holiday rage with Becky Spellman. So great stuff. And
news. All in Russia.
Exactly. News from Corinne Sweet about how actually these days the most significant decision for any young people, that includes yourself, Gabriella, is when to actually purchase your first home. When to purchase your first house.
Okay.
Exactly. It's stuff.
What, like age-wise or like when financially it's right?
Bit of both, really. Bit of both.
Okay.
But it's the way forward. What state of consciousness is Frodo in? Is he still unconscious at present, or has he deigned to actually say, I'm going to wake up now?
I think he's still asleep. He hasn't had his breakfast either, so he's very tired today.
I'm not surprised. All that astral travelling, all that sort of battling through with the whole system. It's perfectly understandable.
The excitement from yesterday. Yeah. Just wiped him off.
Quite right. Much like Richard Fitzwilliams, who also is having to take five today, which is why we're having various other gainful substitutes being brought into place there. Also, good luck with the Great Yorkshire Show. That's on day three today. We thought we'd actually be there, but again, we had to juggle a few other bits and pieces around. But there we have it. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today, Gabriella Peralta?
Yes, I have. Thank you.
Excellent. Will you come back again and join us in even more positivity when I'm sure that even Christian Arkabowicz might actually return? Who knows, we might have some midweek drivettes actually in the studio then, as opposed to just nursing their wounds and all manner of bits and pieces. I tell you, last night, you see the photographs on the Facebook, at present really, for the facebook.com/Southside Broadcasting, and you can see from that perspective that Chloe had her England shirt on, Tessa Snart, our first class honours graduate, she also was rooting away to head off to England and so on. Yeah, that's just painful, never mind. Those of us have been around a wee bit more remember 1990 and other events as well. It's challenging, but it's part of the rich tapestry of life. Gabriella Peralta, we'll speak to you next week.
everybody says that honesty is the best policy, and indeed most folk would hopefully agree with that particular maxim. However, when it comes to claiming expenses, it seems that actually there are a number of dodgy expenses going on in the world today. Effectively, if you look at some of the figures that are released today, £1.9 billion in dodgy expenses are being claimed each year, according to new research, with more than a third of employees admitting to submitting expenses that they know they shouldn't. Okay, let's talk about this. Let's begin to find out why and possibly how this connects with life in general. Who better than to speak to than business neuroscientist Linda Shaw? How are you, Linda?
Hi, Alex. I'm really good, thank you. How are you doing?
Excellent. Very good indeed. But this, there was that sort of notion of obviously taking on the system, beating the system and so on. But these kind of fiddling of expenses, or indeed fraudulent claiming of expenses, just seems to be kind of a bit too serious to be kind of just put to one side and say, oh, it's just a few pennies here.
It's incredibly serious. I was shocked at the figures, to be honest. £1.9 billion a year is an enormous amount of money for organisations to lose. And if you and you know, I get a bit frustrated at this word billion because it's brandished around rather a lot these days. But so I looked it up, and a billion hours ago, we were in the Stone Age. And this is £1.9 billion. That's a lot of money for companies to lose.
I mean, looking at some of the details here, one in 10 employees have actually paid for a trip with their other halves and claimed it through expenses. Now, I've heard apocryphal tales of this actually happening, but I didn't realise it was kind of almost becoming endemic into the system.
Well, it's quite interesting psychology, isn't it? Because when we are making a business decision, we have a set of goals. When we're making an ethical decision, excuse me, we have a different set of goals, and we actually can't do them both at the same time cognitively. So what we do is we put our business hat on and we're thinking, OK, this is company money, this is all right. So ethically, even the most honest person actually can go off the rails. And that, but I have to say, that's those statistics are huge when you consider somebody paying for your partner to go on holiday.
Are there differences between the public sector and the private sector, or haven't we kind of quite managed to sift through the systems? Because clearly there's another issue when you're talking about agencies that are paid for within the public sector, because then actually that's the public's money that's actually being wasted as well, or fraudulently claimed.
I think psychologically we have to not separate them both, because people will do what people do. And cognitively we really are quite flawed. We're not as wonderful and as pure as we like to think we are. So we tend to normalise things. If other people are doing it, we want to be liked, we want to be part of the gang. So we sort of shelve the ethics and we think we're being fine and helpful because we're all part of the same team. So others are doing it, and even company bosses are filling the expenses. So again, we're normalising it. And the less people are caught, there's a lack of risk, then people just do it all the more.
A few years ago, of course, we had the major banking crisis, which is a whole other issue. But it's interesting that 69% of those surveyed actually said that from their perspective, higher earners were more likely to put through deceitful claims. So clearly, if you've got a situation where you believe that your bosses are effectively all in the same trough, so to speak, or whatever mixed metaphor you wish to actually use, then there is a suggestion that perhaps psychologically you're going to say, well, if it's all right for them, I'll do it as well.
Exactly right. So not necessarily that you feel the company owes you something, although some people do it for that reason. It's actually because, as I say, it has been normalised and people justify it. They justify it in various ways, like in the instance you've just suggested, that I deserve it.
Are we really talking here about an ethical situation as much as anything else? Because it's literally just under a quarter of those quizzed by Soldo in the survey who are saying no regrets whatsoever about questionable claims and so on. Is it a case of saying, OK, maybe it's not technically breaching the lines and so on, but is that a whole grey area which, again, cognitively, we just sort of think, well, it's in the grey area and whatever?
It's all about the more we get away with it, the more we can get away with it. So we think, and as everyone else is doing it, it can't possibly be that bad. So it really is actually down to an employer and an employee to address this. Employers are not always terribly clear about their policies, so they need to communicate better. And people need to feel empowered that they feel and trusted. But if they, of course, if they're breaching protocol, then they're not going to be trusted. So there's a catch-22. I mean, for instance, I do an awful lot of behaviour change in businesses, but I know from my own experience, there's only so much you can do by helping people change their mindset. But in actual fact, if you can change the systems and the processes, that helps change people's behaviour. And the example I can give is that if you go into a shop and you pay with a credit card, sometimes they can't open the till until that credit card is removed. That's a really good way of overriding human behaviour, is making us remember to take our credit card. So we do need help sometimes.
With the whole notion of change in society and so on, and obviously a few years ago we had the scandal, quote-unquote, with respect to MPs' expenses and so on, and one of the suggestions about that was, well, one of the reasons people are actually doing this is because people are not being paid effectively value for the work that they're actually doing. So we expect our MPs, for instance, there are lots of other professions, etc., to work through that whole process, to do X amount of work within that whole basis without realising that with all of the stresses and strains that come with that, actually fundamentally we're not paying them enough. Is there something with respect to that, that together with stress, together with zero growth in wages and so on, all kind of fits in to make a perfect storm, shall we say?
Well, it's certainly that all of those things are criteria we have to think about. But this point about stresses and strains is really, really relevant, because what happens is when we are being dishonest and we are being fraudulent, actually that puts us in a place of anxiety, even if that's unconsciously. It's not a good feeling, even though we are justifying it and so on. And everything, I think all the time, we really do need to simplify life. And if we simplify life, there is less anxiety. So we need systems where it just makes our life easier.
Does it then ultimately boil down to getting the right balance between work and life in order for an individual before we can actually expand on that to the corporate and the companies and so on?
Yeah, well, the work-life balance, doesn't that? That's a work in progress, isn't it? Mm. Always is. And of course, we all know the arguments about computers these days are supposed to help us, but in actual fact, they don't. We'd never turn the things off. And we are going on a hiding to nowhere if we don't do a little bit of self-monitoring when it comes to work-life balance.
Well, Linda, the good news is I can actually say that no expenses whatsoever have been claimed for the last interview, so this is all good, so we're clear from that point of view from our end, so I can put it right, this has been a zero funding system, but it's brought a huge amount of benefits to the fore. However, how can people find out further details about some of the things we've been talking about today, Linda?
Well, okay, it's all about smart expenses, so hashtag smart expenses, or indeed go to www.smartexpenses.co.uk.
And almost coming to the end with respect to just a couple of thoughts. I mean, there is that tendency in all kind of environments to see a them and us culture developing between management, between the workers. That doesn't matter whether you're in the private sector, the public sector, and so on. Do we need to really start enhancing our communication between both, or are we always going to see this situation where there is the antagonism that actually somehow it's a bit like Robin Hood, really, but Robin Hood for yourself, effectively taking from what you perceive to be the rich and feathering your own nest and so on?
Alex, everything, absolutely everything, every problem we have boils down to communication. You think about it, world problems, problems at home, minute problems, big problems, huge problems, everything boils down to communication. So if we can if the employers can be a little bit more transparent and put processes in place, which I have to say this Soldo product does do extremely well, and also the employees feel that they're entrusted by using these products so that they feel less anxious, they know how much they can spend, it's all done ahead of time, and just make life simpler. Just let's ease off.
Clearly, Linda, we need to actually promote your good self as a front runner in terms of this perspective, because this has been the most sense that I've actually had for years from that point of view, which is wonderful stuff. Two final questions for yourself. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Dr. Linda Shaw?
Have I what?
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today? Has it been okay for you? It's our customer satisfaction thing.
I have had a wonderful time, thank you.
Very good. So I take it we can prevail upon you to join us again in the not-too-distant future and see if hopefully we see some improvements thanks to some of the things we've talked about today.
Well, let's hope so.
I promise you.
Over the past, 14 months, we've been connecting with some of these students from the University of Lincoln who've been over with KDU Penang. And finally, the time has come where we've got KDU Penang students in Lincoln. Yes, tremendous, fantastic. And we've got two fabulous examples in the studio now. First of all, we have Carol.
Hello, yes.
And we also have fabulous Richie. How are you, Richie?
I'm fine, thank you.
Brilliant. Carol, let's come to you first. All right. Would you like to explain how you went through the process of coming over to Lincoln, England, from, of course, the slightly hotter Malaysia?
Should I start, like, right from the beginning?
I think so, yes. Let's take the narrative through, though.
All right. Last year, we've been told by the lecturers of this program, the summer school program in Lincoln, and we even had the Lincoln students coming over. So that's when I started to get interested in this, like, wow, I can study abroad. I can come over to the University of Lincoln. So I kept thinking about it, but over the months, I kind of like forgotten about it until this year, when the subject came up again, I was like, yes, I think I should just grab this opportunity and go for it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, same line for yourself, Richie. Was that a similar pattern?
No. Actually, at first, when they have this offer, I was not really interested in coming. But after that, I have a trip to Australia, where I visit my friends studying in the university there. Mm-hmm. So I had the chance to see how studying abroad looks like. So and then I got interested and then decided to join this program.
So. Which is fantastic. Now, I've heard all about the fantastic things that our students have been getting up to whilst they've been over with KDU Penang. I think you met some of them who are around there.
They
assured me that they kind of briefed you on what to expect when you came to Lincoln, England.
Yes.
Including the need to run up and down Steep Hill a few times.
But, oh, definitely.
Exactly. Has it lived up to your expectations? Has the course matched what you're looking for? Is it a case of, no, I want to go back to Malaysia straight away?
First of all, for me, I wasn't really quite sure what to expect when I came here, but it has exceeded my expectations, especially like in the classes, the course, the way the lecturers teach us is slightly different from what we have back in KDU, mm-hmm. which is very interesting, thought-provoking, and I enjoy it here.
Infinite diversity in infinite combinations, as occasionally we like to say. Richie, what about yourself? I mean, you made that decision. How's it been? Better?
It's definitely better. So same as Carol, because we were told that we have to expect more interaction between lecturers and students. So back in KDU, we have what we said, that's a one-way teaching. So we will just absorb everything the lecturer told us. So here we are expected to do some self-reading, some interaction, so it's a totally different experience.
It's a really interesting and fascinating line there, because we talk a great deal about blended learning and how you need a kind of combination of things to kind of impact on that. And that's really part of the heart of this cultural exchange, that you do get that in essence, and obviously being brought on to do part of these radio links is part of that.
I think that it's not only about KDU being like a one-way teaching, it's more of like Asian culture where everyone just sits back and listen quietly, the students, I mean, yeah.
No, well, sometimes the classic line, we have two ears and one mouth, should we do twice as much listening as speaking? And it's something I sometimes say some of my colleagues should adopt. No, I won't say anything else. That could be a different line entirely. Richie, what things have you been doing whilst you've been here? Just take us through your kind of activities, because I know that the range of activities that have been going on in Malaysia have been phenomenal. So what have you been doing external to your curriculum?
So not really much. Actually, just when, like, frequent grocery shoppings, because we have to cook every day. Yeah. So, and maybe some morning jogs. Went to the gym a few days ago.
Yeah.
And have a walk around.
And in terms of the culture of Lincoln, has it got any surprises? Because clearly there is the notion, and there's the kind of stereotype, that when we deal with people from other countries, they have a view that, well, it's not like London. You know, and obviously it isn't like London. It's close by London, but were you surprised by the castle, by the cathedral? Have you seen any of the sort of elements here?
Yeah, I went to the cathedral. It was really amazing, like a very spectacular view from the bottom of the cathedral. If you look up, you'll see a big building, and then wow. And
well, it was built 1,000 or so years ago, just for your arrival, Richie. And of course, it's very they had that in forward thinking, forward planning.
And life here, it was like, if you compare it to back in Penang in Malaysia, so it was a city where it's very, very busy, where people were just hustling and bustling everywhere. And then here it's very chill and calm, something like a place where you would like to retire after your work in the future.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. Does that kind of chime with your own experiences, Carol?
Yes. Aside from the architecture here, what I find interesting, especially up on Steep Hill, was that there's a lot of live performances, a lot of buskers. Hmm. Yeah. So because we don't have a lot of that back in Malaysia, and it's very interesting to watch like the life that's going on, the culture, the people walking by and all this. Yeah.
Now, you've come to the University of Lincoln, which is a relatively young university. It's been around for about 20 years or thereabouts. What are your thoughts on what you've seen around campus so far? I mean, were you surprised? Were you sort of impressed? What about not so much the teaching, but the way it looks and so on? Richie?
It's really big, actually. So if you compare it back to KDU, it's just a building with everything inside. But here you have your own separate buildings and everything. And the way the university makes use of old buildings is really amazing, where because you can just take a warehouse and make it into a library, or you can take an old newspaper factory into a new building, business school.
Mm-hmm. And I think we're actually at Siren Radio, which is in the now renamed Alfred Tennyson Building, which is a local, a wonderful Lincolnshire poet. We've also, in the studio, observing and keeping a keen eye out for various other bits and pieces, got the official escort for the whole sort of system. That's Sarah Haynes. Sarah, if you just swing the microphone around for a few moments. I've got to say, the quality of the students is just tremendous. I mean, this must be a joy for yourself to just coordinate with David as well. It's great stuff.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. From sending our students out there and seeing what they've got up to, and I've been out to Malaysia twice, even though I've only been doing that job for 12 months, and David and I had a little session where we met the 12 that have come over this time, so it's been really nice to welcome them to Lincoln, and it's been even better that we've had such great weather and it's been dry and not too cold.
We ordered it specially.
Yeah.
I think Richie actually said if it wasn't good weather, he wouldn't just tell me good. Great. Moving on, what's been the highlight of your time so far? Richie, we'll come to you first.
Highlight? Actually, I wouldn't say there's much of a highlight, just that coming here, we just had the chance to polish our cooking skills, actually. So we don't cook much back in Malaysia, so coming here, cooking every day and getting to try new recipes where you have been thinking for a very, very, very long time, it's just been something you won't get to do back in Malaysia, because we our families cook for us already, so yeah.
Now, I was just reporting on the Great Yorkshire Show yesterday. A few weeks ago, we had the Lincolnshire Show, and cooking is very much the heart of that. What culinary delights have you produced so far? I mean, have you gone for traditional version? What sort of things have you done?
Actually, I did pan-seared salmon and mincemeat burgers.
We are. I'm glad to see you didn't say beans on toast, which for so many years was a kind of cliche to the whole thing. Similar thing for yourself, highlights or any sort of areas which you thought, actually, that was a memorable time?
It's quite hard to say, because a lot of things have been highlights for me. Mm. Weather, for one. I really love the weather here. And
it's not necessarily always like this, it has to be said, but what the
heck? Yeah, even the lectures, the classes that I go through with the lecturers, I find that very, very nice. And just to be able to like roam around this university, I find it to be quite homely, because although it's quite huge, but the things are quite near to each other, where it's just walking distance, and yeah, exploring the town, the city.
Critical question though: when you go back to KDU Penang, will you consider returning? Will you come back to doing some time with us, etc.? Will this be the start of a whole routine? Would you consider returning?
Returning,
yes.
Here? I would consider that. Mm-hmm. I might continue maybe my master's, my PhD, but after working for a few years. So by then, I might be coming back here. Yeah.
Richie, you ended up going to Australia. You almost weren't going to come at all, but thanks to the colleagues. Now you've actually experienced it here. You've made some Lincoln very own mincemeat burgers, etc. Would you sort of say, yeah, I might come back?
Yeah, I think I might come back also because I have... thought of doing my master's, so might be coming back here. Maybe not in the near future, but after working for a few years as such.
It would be remiss of me not to just mention briefly that cultural thing that's been going on, which we've been speaking about with our students over in Malaysia, the FIFA World Cup. Now, I gather there was quite a lot of support, I believe, in KDU Malaysia for England. Is that the case? Because, I mean, clearly we're at a critical time in the whole game now. Do you follow the game at all?
Yep.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts? Do you think that Gareth Southgate is going to do the business?
I think England, yes, in overall, has a good shot in, yep, winning the World Cup, because we saw their performance back in a few days ago. Mm. So their performance really looks different from the past few World Cups, and I think they have a good shot in winning this World Cup.
That's it. This is good news. And would you concur with that particular line, Carol?
Personally, I'm not a fan of football. Yeah, but I would definitely support England all the way. Yeah.
There we are. It's fantastic. It's been an absolute delight sharing some thoughts with your good self. I'm going to ask you to do a few idents and jingles as well before you actually go, so we'll do that. Don't worry, it's nothing too panicky from that point of view. But to Richie, to Carol, and of course to Sarah Payne. It's fantastic. Actually, Sarah Payne. It's not Sarah Payne. It's Sarah Haynes.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes, it's all right. Sarah, I was thinking another Sarah for that point. A huge thanks. And I'm sure we will continue speaking with you even when you're back in KDU Malaysia.
Yes.
Marvellous, keeping the international theme to the Midweek Drive-Out package going. And a piece that was actually recorded before, of course, the major, major, major shock result yesterday. Roger Federer being knocked out of Wimbledon. Sorry, I couldn't resist that, Ian, because I know you're gutted that our Swiss champion, eight-time Wimbledon champion, actually didn't see the shock quarterfinal exit against Kevin Anderson actually coming. And clearly, it's the sporting ramifications of Federer being knocked out of Wimbledon eclipse everything else, really, don't they? Yeah. Okay. Sigh there. How are Ollie and Obo keeping and coping these days? We'll move straight to the point. Donald Trump is here.
Yes. I think
you just think one door shuts, another door, a window open. Who knows what could actually happen? Just when we thought the whole nation kind of decided to lose its hope, we've got the President of the United States actually sort of in the country, so to speak. Ian, did you watch the game yesterday? The game, of course, being Croatia versus Gareth Southgate's men.
Yes, I did. And I found it quite interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most interesting thing to get out of this cup is that England have changed completely their style of play. They've now started to play from the back. I suspect because a lot of the influence of the foreign coaches in the Premier League, most of the top teams are now coached by people from abroad who all play proper football, which you never did. And so some of the English players who are in those teams are used to the system.
Are you suggesting, Ian, that what we actually have with the current team is a kind of combination of a synthesis of Pep Guardiola, Maurizio Pochettino with a lashing of Gareth Southgate?
What I'm saying is that for years there was a continental style of playing from the back, and we didn't. We tend to boot the ball. If it didn't have ice on it, you were sacked.
Well, we did return to that for the second half, and parts of the extra time period yesterday, it did seem as though shape had actually been lost a wee bit, sadly. And some of the old failings seem to be manifesting after various other bits and pieces. I mean, OK, there's the what might have been, if only John Stones' header hadn't been cleared off the line, if only Harry Kane had passed to Raheem Sterling. But it's an if only again, isn't it?
He was carrying an injury to me, and indeed not this game, but the one before that. The shadow of himself, not as he normally is. And he also hardly ever got in the penalty area. He's playing about 30, 40 yards on goal.
Yeah, which, as I said, tragically, another same old story. I'm always very hesitant to start talking about golden generations and where things are going and such like, because I think, again, we've been there before so many times.
Oh, yes. But the thing I'm talking about this time is a different style of play. And also, we've found two or three players who just come through from nowhere, and they're good players, and they're young players. And if we continue with that, don't forget we won the under-17s and under-20s World Cups, I think. And so we've got some good players coming through. If they start to mature in the next two or three years, we could have a very good side.
Luka Modric stated Croatia underestimated by English pundits lacking respect.
Probably, yes, well, the English pundits, yes, they probably did. They're all drunk on patriotism, certainly, aren't they?
And a country which is smaller than Panama, actually, in terms of numbers. World Cup finalists, they were World Cup semi-finalists, obviously, in 1998. And let's face it, they were part of the former place that was called Yugoslavia back in the day. So if you actually sort of went back to Yugoslavia, when they were quite a reasonable football team, they clearly have got a range of things through. However, I'm going to stand by my line that I've already put out on the various sort of social media forums, or at least via email, not public yet, but I'll make it public now. I think it'll be a final in which it'll be France 3, Croatia 0.
Oh, yeah. Oh, right, okay.
Put that there.
The French have certainly won the better teams in the competition. Mm. I suspect they and Brazil were the two best teams.
Well, I think Belgium have got something to say about that, and I think they probably will. I think Belgium will probably pick up the bronze medal, because unless there's a turnaround, and it would be lovely to actually see that actually there is a commitment to get third place. I mean, people have been saying, "Oh, it's a nothing match. You should actually scrap it. It's just a money making." I mean, I actually heard this on the radio coming into Siren Radio this morning. That on another station that was saying, "Oh, you should scrap the third place playoff. It's just a money making exercise." Excuse me. I think you'll find the entire FIFA World Cup is just a money making exercise. So to actually lose the opportunity to get the bronze medal, which in the words of Slaven Bilic is one of his most treasured possessions when Croatia finished third in 98, I think it's a shame. But what are your thoughts, Ian? Do you think the third place playoff match is just a waste of time?
In this particular case, certainly not, because as I say, England I think are a progressing team and it'll give them a chance to not experiment but to make some little changes and tweak here and there, and just for them to assess certain types of play in certain situations, without the stress of one mistake and you're out, sort of thing.
Yeah, unfortunately, though, I still have a sense that it'll be Belgium 2, England 1, but that's by the by. It's have a feeling they might possibly, they of course being Belgium, with the likes of Kevin De Bruyne and Vincent Kompany up against Kyle Walker, possibly, and indeed other Man City sort of folk, they might just be a tad too much. I don't know. It's a slightly... I do remember 1990, and I remember the kind of despair, because that we turned it around. The players actually had a move. We started off, England started off slowly, then they actually decided under the players' line to switch to 4-4-2, because I think Bobby Robson had originally tried a different system to start off with, and then they obviously went through to, obviously, the game against Germany. There was the tragedy of Paul Gascoigne, which these days can't occur unless you're actually sent off and give a red card in the semi-final. But then you could also argue, well, they were more mature in those days. They were older, and so on and so forth. Should Gareth Southgate receive a knighthood, Ian? What do you think? Or are you still saying no? It'll be Sir Ian Lennox before it's Sir Gareth Southgate.
I don't think that's correct. I think it's too early. If it won the thing, I suppose.
Yeah. I think it would have been unquestioned from that perspective. However, I think the priority being, or the criteria might be, because of Sir Bobby Robson clearly awarded that. One thing I would actually say, Bobby Robson had got to the quarterfinals in 1986 and we'd had the Argentinian debacle there from that point of view. So technically he made the quarterfinals and the semifinals. His European Championship record wasn't quite as good, but he had got that bit of consistency, and maybe we need to hold back until Gareth Southgate has reached the semi-finals of Qatar, perhaps, or maybe even the final.
Well, I mean, Gareth Southgate has been in the job for only 5 minutes.
Exactly. Do you think Sam Allardyce is secretly pleased that the lads have gone out, or is it a case of, well, we don't know. Who would have thought? Because after all, he's still the only English manager with a 100% record.
Sorry, who's this?
Sam Allardyce, 100% record. One win, one no draws, no defeats.
Yes, and a self-inflicted wound as well.
Exactly. Although I have to say, it's unlikely, and even in a very strange parallel universe, that Sam Allardyce would have had quite the success, I feel, that Gareth Southgate has had, because I suspect Sam might have still had Wayne Rooney as captain, and other folk would probably have been limping into the place with other reasons and rationales. I could be wrong, but there we are. So it's literally just a matter of weeks before we start off all over again. In fact, we've already started the qualifying rounds for the European Champions League. Ian, are you getting anticipated? Or do you think, no, I need to rest now. And I might watch the third place playoff game. I might struggle to watch the France-Croatia final. But after that, it's a case of, no, I need to give football a rest.
I think it's about a month before the actual kick-off for the new season, isn't it?
A little bit less, actually. First of all, August time, basically, we're in place. The championship fixtures kick off literally first Saturday in August.
I grew up in the days, you know, when cricket took place in the summer.
Yes.
Football took place in the winter.
Yes.
And you could have there were quite a number of very, very good all-rounders who played for England at cricket and football. And you certainly had a lot of people who were playing professional football and playing county cricket.
Exactly.
Can't do that now.
Absolutely impossible. I think the last person who managed to have a rough guess at that was Ian Botham. And obviously he's a top-class cricketer, but didn't do too much as far as...
Scunthorpe Reserves, I think it was, wasn't it?
That's exactly so. Well sorted from that point of view. But yes, the opening fixture for indeed North East side Middlesbrough, I know, and Lincoln as well, actually, for the championship, because they're also there, Saturday the 4th of August. So there we have it. It's going to come around before we literally know it. And of course, remember, we're moving now to rescheduling the entire fixture. We've got winter breaks coming in, and we've also got the next World Cup, which will be held in November, December time.
Yes. That was a good decision, wasn't it?
Well, you say that, Ian, but people were pouring a lot of scorn upon... President Putin and the whole package of the Russia, and yet this has arguably been one of the better World Cups, if not the best World Cup in terms of entertainment and scenario. And that can't all just be down to VAR, can it?
Well, there's a lot of allegations come out now. There's a lot of dogs have been shot to keep them off the streets.
Right. Well, you know, again, that could be sour grapes. Just in case you're wondering, Lincoln City are away to Northampton on Saturday, the 4th of August. That's their opening game in Division.
Can you hear me, Alex?
Yes, I'm just giving you Lincoln City's game against Northampton on Saturday, the 4th of August. I thought it was much, much more positive than talking about canines having unfortunate ends in Moscow.
I don't really think so.
Well, it's exciting.
But more people interested than the dogs have been shot in Moscow.
What, more people than are interested in who Lincoln City are playing against Northampton? I think.
Has petition being signed at the moment?
Well, you know, again, let's focus on the positive side of things here. At least, you know, we can say that we share with our Russian cousins and friends the fact that we've both lost to Croatia in the World Cup finals. So, you know, we can drown our sorrows together in a mutual scenario on that basis. There's a kind of connection there. And despite what Phil Lyons was saying yesterday about how he was anticipating tremendously, in fact, he thought it was the perfect final in terms of Brexit, in terms of global politics, etc. His own words, it would be a sexy final. He would have had France versus England. Not to be, not in this reality. So there we are. It's a different line. Ian Lennox, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today? This is good. Will you be coming back and joining us again next week?
I hope so.
Marvellous.
Into the blue again. After the money's gone, once in a life.
commitment. It's often been said that clearly we have to, in some stage or shape or form, make that decision one way or the other to do something, do anything in many ways. But it seems that recently actually buying a home is probably even greater commitment than actually getting married. Almost two-thirds of first-time buyers actually believe that buying a house together shows greater commitment than getting married, with over a quarter of those surveyed feeling that buying a property is a good test of a relationship and should be done ahead of getting married. So to address some of the aspects relating to this and how in the 21st century we're continuing to change and adjust and evolve, perhaps we're delighted to welcome that fantastically awesome relationship expert. It's the wonderful Corinne Sweet. How are you, Corinne?
Goodness me, what a build-up. Good morning. That's fantastic.
Well, it's only right that we should connect with your good self for this, because this particular survey does suggest that ultimately we want to, first of all, lay our mark down. We want to have our patch. First question, is this a peculiarly British thing? Because clearly couples in other European countries often say, well, we'll just rent and then we'll get married and so on. But
well, indeed. I mean, there's been a survey done by Barclays, and it's really about millennials, the 18 to 35 age group, who are now first-time buyers, who simply are looking at the market and looking at the situation and saying, as you said in your intro, that buying a house now is a bigger commitment, a greater commitment, one they want to commit to, than actually getting married. Now, if you'd gone back 50 years, it would have been unthinkable, would have been completely round the other way. And in fact, 44% of them are going home to stay with mum and dad, even in their 20s, even into their 30s, to save up for that deposit for a house. But of course, that does lead to some arguments and some frustrations, because going back to live under your parents' roof in your 20s or 30s, once you've established yourself as a grown-up, can be difficult.
Well, in addition to that, of course, we have situations if couples are living in the family, you've got all manner of aspects coming across. I mean, I'm mindful of the old series Till Death Us Do Part, which kind of also played around a little bit with respect to in-laws and relations and so on and so forth.
Well, absolutely. I think the shadow of Alf Garnett is over us all. But the survey found that 13% of people really hated the idea of having a curfew going back to mum and dad. It's all very annoying. And 28% said they can't relax. And 37% said the lack of independence is terrible. And 39% said they feel they're being watched, you know. And that is a problem, that you've got your own habits, you've got your own way of doing things. You're back in the parental home as a couple. And it's very, very difficult to relax and to be yourselves. So I think a lot of young people and young adults are finding themselves caught in this trap while they're trying to get onto the property ladder.
And presumably the reverse is the case as well, because parents who might have thought that their offspring had gone, they'd fled the nest, they're sorting that things through, they'll be getting into their own habits and so on and so forth. And maybe they're sort of thinking, well, hang on, you know, we thought this was already done and dusted, or we're quite happy to come and visit you, but we didn't necessarily expect to sort of be, you know, all connected together.
Absolutely. I think there is a sort of frustration all around. I'm a psychotherapist and a psychologist, and you know, I see clients who are going back to live with their parents, and they have all sorts of problems about how am I going to lead my life? You know, how am I going to keep myself private? How am I going to deal with my relationships and my particular habits? You know, and I think for the parents as well, it's, oh, my goodness, I thought we were going to go on the world tour, and now we've got to go back to going to the supermarket for the whole family. And, you know, I think it does cause a lot of stress all round.
We've moved on somewhat from the notion of living in sin and a whole variety of ethical, moral issues that are put together from that perspective. Maybe also some might say there's an argument that try before you buy is something which has also got challenges in its own sort of way from that point of view. Is there a kind of happy medium that we're looking at here? Is it a case of, well, OK, make sure that financially you've got the wherewithal to save up and actually purchase a property, but sometimes you need to perhaps defer gratification, just hold fire a little bit, maybe set out a schedule, look for things to be developed from that point of view?
Well, I think there's lots of things around money that couples need to talk about. I'm seeing more and more couples come to see me before they even move in, where they're trying to iron out all sorts of issues in their relationships, and money is just one of them. But talking about money is something we don't do very well as British people. We're very shy about it. We're quite squeamish about it. We don't like to be too open about it. We'd rather talk about sex, and especially the football scores. We'd rather talk about anything than money. But actually, I think if a couple is looking to buy a property, they really do need to, first of all, have a kind of clear and open discussion with each other. I often encourage couples just to write each other a letter or an email that just states what they believe or feel about money, because we've all got our own emotional money baggage. We've got patterns about money. We might, you know, never open those envelopes and drop them behind the sofa, or we might be a hoarder, or we might be constantly buying new shoes and sticking in the back of the wardrobe. You know, everybody's got their own particularly bad habits or good habits about money. But you need to tell your partner up front and openly about any debts or loans or problems you have about money, whether you're a gambler on late night poker or whatever it is. And so that when you go into a relationship and you're trying to buy a property, you really know where you are with each other. And if you're going home to stay with mum and dad, you've then got to talk about who buys what and who shares what, and all that stuff has to be out in the open.
I was fascinated by the finding that if money was no object, over half of those surveyed would prefer to buy a property with their partner rather than get married. That could again have its challenges down the road, I would have thought.
Well, I think the issue is that the property buying really represents an investment in longevity in a relationship. And the survey by Barclays found that, you know, as you said, 56% would prefer to have the property rather than the wedding, even if they could afford it. So in other words, the kind of in a secular society, we've become actually much more focused on something that represents longevity rather than particularly a ceremony. And I think there is a huge commitment in buying something together. You do have to deal with lawyers and estate agents. You do have to cooperate. You do have to slug things out. You do have to cost things out. And you do have to work together. And I think it really is a very good test of a relationship.
And clearly not everybody can be a premiership footballer or indeed a BBC newsreader. But anyway, that's another line entirely. Were you surprised by any of the findings yourself, Corinne? Or is it a case of actually from your own day-to-day work, these are the kind of things you would have said, yes, more or less, they fit within the sort of areas I was expecting?
Well, I think one of the things I find increasingly when I see people and talk to people is, you know, the huge, huge rents that young people are being forced to buy, to spend on when they're working, the huge strain of that in the big cities, and the difficulty of finding rented accommodation that's appropriate and affordable. And in fact, I know so many young people now and young adults who are spending so much on rent, you know, that they could buy three houses if it was a mortgage. So I think if you can actually work with your family to work towards getting a mortgage and you can be open and cooperate with each other, I think we've all got to learn to talk about money. We've all got to learn to talk about the thing that makes us feel uncomfortable, because if we don't, we'll come unstuck down the road.
And ultimately, it perhaps all boils down to communication, being aware of people's thoughts, opinions, as you've already suggested, the need to listen, the need to connect, very much at the heart of this. Corinne, where can people go to find out further information about what we've been talking about today?
Well, I found out that there is something called a family springboard mortgage, which actually helps young people and young adults buy a house by involving their families in the deposit. And actually, it sounds a really good idea to me. And you can just go online and Google Barclays Mortgages, or you could just look up Barclays and find out more about it. There's some research on there. And I think the more you inform yourself and you look around and you look at the Money Advice Centre, which is a government thing, you know, you really do need to sort of do your homework before you go into this kind of thing. And the more you can talk about money with each other openly, with not over alcohol, do it over a cup of tea and keep it short, but really do talk about it and you'll feel better overall long term.
Yes, definitely not over alcohol. Definitely a recipe for potential disaster there.
Indeed.
Corinne, the usual two final questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us yourself today? Has it been okay?
I had a fantastic link with you. It's been a really wonderful experience.
Well, that is wonderful for us as well. So I take it we can connect with you again in the not too distant future, talking about
any
who knows
time
what.
About anything. Absolutely.
Fantastic. Relationship expert and ace psychotherapist extraordinaire, Corinne Sweet. Many thanks indeed. Take care now.
Bye-bye. Have you ever seen a crowd?